Time now on RT Radio 1 to catch up on stories making headlines across the world on this week's World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, how the case of a stateless migrant in Australia raises the prospect of hundreds of false imprisonment claims, and the children of political prisoners in Tunisia want the world's attention focused on their incarcerated parents. But first we go to Denmark, where the biggest fraud trial in Danish history has begun. It involves a British national, Sanjay Shah, who's one of nine people accused of defrauding Denmark of €1.6 billion through major tax avoidance schemes. Tom Carstensen reports from Copenhagen.
€1.65 billion. That is what Sanjay Shah is on trial for stealing from the Danish state. The trial started this Friday. According to the Danish authorities, the accused Sanjay Shah illegally got Danish taxes on stock trades reimbursed without tax ever actually being paid in the first place, and on stock he never owned. Before being extradited to Denmark, Shah was living in Dubai. Here he has already lost two civil lawsuits between the Danish state and him, one in 2022 and one the year after. In 2023, he was ordered by a Dubai court to pay back more than €1.3 billion to the Danish state. The case became notorious in Denmark because it was disclosed that official tax office employees were easily fooled, wined and dined at big dinners in the process by the fraudsters. And in 2017, a former employee of the Danish tax office, who had then moved to the United States, was charged with fraud in the region of €5 million and for having received bribes for around €300,000. It has also worried Danish tax experts that the Danish authorities only got wind of the fraud due to other countries' tax offices alerting them. One expert, Torben Bakke, has said that the massive cutbacks in the workforce of the tax office could be a major reason for this. And up to 40% of all the money paid out in this reimbursement scheme in that time period is now believed to have been fraud. The Danish case is not unique, according to authorities. According to them, a network of lawyers, banks and finance people have for years been using the method to rob European states of tax money. They have illegally claimed back taxes on stock earnings in places where they were not eligible to do so. So accordingly, a number of European states have lost billions on this. The number being thrown around is up to €60 billion. The case of Sanjay Shah, where he was extradited to Denmark from Dubai in December of last year, goes all the way back to 2012. In 2015, the Danish tax office went to the police to report what they saw as deliberate illegal reimbursement of tax on earnings on stock trade. According to the charges, Sanjay Shah embezzled the billions of Danish kroner by falsely sending in 3,399 applications to have taxes reimbursed on money made on Danish stock. But he never actually owned the stock, according to the Danish authorities. Instead, he pretended to have the right to get the tax reimbursed. He did this with the reason that he wasn't eligible to pay taxes in Denmark because his companies were based outside of the country. In the beginning, the estimate was that it was less than €1 billion that was missing. That number went up to nearly double that later in the process. And in 2018, a group of independent media estimated that the problem was not isolated to Denmark, and that's where the number of €60 billion come in. Sanjay Shah was born in London and attended King's College there. Until recently, he lived in Dubai, where the Danish authorities for a long time struggled to have him extradited from the United Arab Emirates. That finally happened in 2023, where he was flown to Denmark on a small jet. Since then, he has been imprisoned in a Copenhagen top security prison. Shah is also suspected to have done similar things in both Norway and Belgium. All the way through the process, Sanjay Shah has claimed that he's been using a legal loophole in the system. It could, however, be hard to convince the Danish justice system that he's innocent and didn't know this was illegal, because another person has already pleaded guilty. On Friday, British national Anthony Mark Patterson accepted an 8-year prison sentence in a case connected to Shah's. He has had 2 weeks to appeal, but has decided not to. Originally, he pleaded not guilty, but then changed his mind and agreed to being sentenced. He has also had around €15 million confiscated. Patterson pleaded guilty to having helped Shah in the fraud. The main case continues. For RTE World Report in Copenhagen, this is Tom Carstensen.
to Australia next, where the government there could face hundreds of false imprisonment claims after the country's High Court ruled that it was unlawful to indefinitely hold a person in immigration detention. The case involved a stateless migrant who faced the prospect of lifelong detention because Australia was unable to deport him. The government in Canberra had insisted his detention was lawful because it planned to eventually expel him from the country, despite its inability to do so. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The High Court has turned a key part of Australia's immigration policy on its head. It's overturned a 20-year-old legal precedent that had asserted the indefinite detention of non-citizens was lawful. But the judges said it was unconstitutional to hold foreign nationals behind bars for an unlimited amount of time if there was no practical way to deport them. Campaigners have celebrated what they've described as an important and long-awaited victory for human rights. They'd argued indefinite immigration detention in Australia was arbitrary, unfair, and breached international law. About 150 detainees have now been released from custody. They were locked up because they'd failed a character test for an Australian visa, but couldn't be deported as they had nowhere to go. The High Court case initially involved a stateless Rohingya man. He faced the prospect of lifelong detention in Australia, since no country would resettle him because of a conviction here for child sexual offences. He's not the only former detainee with a criminal record. Half of those released from custody had been found guilty of violent crimes, as well as kidnapping or robbery. In some cases, the offences took place overseas. The Conservative opposition has seized on the opportunity to accuse the Labour government of doing too little to protect the community from hardened criminals. Senior ministers said the detainees would be put under surveillance and placed under nighttime curfews. Two-thirds are currently subject to those conditions. The government in Canberra plans to seek the preventive re-detention of people considered to be a danger to society. In Australia, immigration is a complex political and social issue. More than a quarter of the population was born overseas. This rainbow nation is one of the most multicultural places on the planet. Those invited in with the promise of permanent residency and citizenship because of their skills, family connections, or places at university are part of successive waves of migrants that have shaped modern Australia. However, asylum seekers are treated very differently. Those who come by boat have been told they will never be resettled in Australia, and were sent to offshore processing camps in the Pacific. Since 2013, the Australian Navy has been ordered to tow or turn away migrant boats. Ministers insist the uncompromising policy prevents asylum seekers from risking their lives in unseaworthy vessels. Occasionally, a migrant boat breaches Australia's maritime defences. Earlier this year, about 40 men, reportedly from Pakistan and Bangladesh, were found near a remote indigenous community in Western Australia. They were quickly flown to the tiny Pacific island of Nauru to have their claims for refugee status dealt with far away from Australia. A suspicion of uninvited foreigners, especially those who come by sea, seems to be ingrained into Australia's political psyche. We will decide who comes to this country and the circumstances in which they come. These were the words of the former Prime Minister John Howard. They remain as pertinent now as they were when they were made in a campaign speech in 2001. For World Report, this is Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Finally to Tunisia. The international community has been urged to put pressure on the president of Tunisia over the arrest of over 20 of his political opponents. The children of the political prisoners detained by President Kais Saied were in Geneva this week to ask the UN Human Rights Council for help. They want more focus placed on Tunisia and are demanding the release of their imprisoned parents. From Tunis, Elysia Volkman reports.
Last week at the 55th meeting of the UN Human Rights Council, the children of Tunisia's political prisoners appealed to the international community to apply pressure to the Tunisian authorities to release their parents, who they say are held illegally in appalling conditions. It's over a year since a series of arrests that rounded up over 20 of President Kais Saied of Tunisia's most vocal political critics. Those arrested accused Saied of a coup d'etat and call his rule authoritarian. Kais Saied assumed executive control over the country back in July 2021, sacking the government and freezing the parliament, before later changing the constitution to gather absolute power in his hands, including total control over the judiciary. Amongst the detainees are former members of parliament, political activists, academics, and judges. Most are held under the terrorism law in pre-trial detention. Some cases have been tried, judged, and sentenced without their presence or lawyers being informed. The first political prisoner to be sentenced was 82-year-old Rashid Ghannouchi, the former Speaker of the National Assembly and leader of Ennahda, the Muslim Democratic Party that once held most seats in the parliament. Ghannouchi chose to boycott the court hearings last May, but his lawyers were not informed of the hearing and were later informed that Ghannouchi was sentenced to 1 year in prison. This February, he was sentenced to a further 3 years. Those detained are not young men. Many have serious health conditions requiring regular medication. They complain that they are not afforded even the most basic rights of prisoners. At the conference held in Geneva this week, Aziz Akrami, son of the judge and terrorism expert Bashir Akrami, told how his father was arrested last February and tortured for 1 week, causing him to have a nervous breakdown, requiring hospitalization. Aziz said his father described his treatment at the hands of the Tunisian authorities as disgusting. Kawtha Fajani, the daughter of Ennahda Member of Parliament Saied Fajani, described her father being imprisoned in a room with over 100 other prisoners, all heavy smokers, which impacted her 70-year-old father's respiratory health. She said her father had been taken to hospital on several occasions for health problems because he had been denied access to regular medication, medical review, or even a flu vaccination. Ilyas Shaweshi, son of Ghazi Shaweshi, leader of the centrist Democratic Current Party, said that he wanted to refute the idea that Kais Saied was just targeting Islamists. Ilyas stressed that the arrests were across the political spectrum, and that the only thing that they had in common was that they all spoke out against Saied's regime. An industrial engineer by profession, Ilyas Shaweshi says he is also concerned about his father's failing health and told RTE that the whole family is suffering. He too was also tried and sentenced in absentia for publicly criticising the president in a telephone call on a TV programme and now has become a political exile in France. He says that he tries to remain positive, peaceful and brave as his father raised him to be, but he said that he hasn't heard his father's voice in over 13 months. He said it's like he is dead, yet alive, that he cannot speak to his father, only hear about his father from lawyers. At the conference, KC Rodney Dixon said that the prisoners have exhausted all legal remedies possible in Tunisia and have been forced to file cases outside of Tunisia, and that it falls to the UN and international community to take action. The families have filed cases at the International Criminal Court in The Hague and also with the African Court. KC Dixon explained to RTE that the African Court has already ordered provisional measures to protect the rights of political prisoners. However, the basic rights of prisoners have not been complied with, and they are now awaiting another decision from the court. Having spent the past year travelling to the US, EU countries, UK and African states, appealing to those governments to apply pressure to the Tunisian authorities to release their parents, the children say that they are frustrated by the lack of any concrete action to free their fathers. Aziz Akrami stressed that parents' release is now a matter of urgency, saying that prison in Tunisia is designed by the regime to kill you slowly and to try to get rid of you. This week, President Kais Saied demanded that judicial procedures should be accelerated, so it is more likely those currently in prison will be sentenced to ensure that they remain silent behind bars for many years to come, unless the outside intervention that their children seek is granted. For RTE, I'm Elysia Falkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.